The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Tanger Outlets, find hundreds of brands at unbeatable value. Save big on outerwear, must-have handbags, active essentials, classic favorites, footwear, and more up to 70% off. Shop Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. All the best brands, all on sale, every day. Only at Tanger Outlets.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to discuss the offense, kind of a happy discussion after that big win against the Bengals, a big comeback win, great fourth quarter, just a kind of a magical night of football on a Thursday. Here to do that with me is Jim Zipcoat, the artist.
Hey, Ken.
Known as Jim Zipcoat. How you doing?
That's right. I'm great. How are you?
Life is good. Always a pleasure to talk football with you, my friend. It seems like it's been a long time. Maybe
it has been
this summer since we did one of the reviews of two players, maybe, or
I think longer than that, maybe.
Okay.
Oh, yes. No, you did have me on for a review of two players because I got to choose Jarrett Johnson.
Jarrett Johnson. Okay. So that was a historical perspective.
Historical. Yes. Great.
All right. Outstanding. So I was trying to get my favorite people on for those for those shows. Appreciate it.
Well, it turns out I think that a lot of people wanted that slot, and so I took it ahead of some people. So that was very nice.
Good job, man. Good job. Always the early bird. This is a night where Lamar made everything all right in the end. It was clearly things were not going well, down 21-7, them having the football, looking like the Ravens couldn't really stop them very easily. Another score there, I think it would all have been over. All of a sudden, Marlon Humphrey pulled out the football and Roquan fell on it and Lamar took it from there.
It's interesting how the divisional opponent has your number defensively. Like we've seen kind of the opposite thing happen when Lamar plays NFC teams and they have no idea what to do with him. And he's got that absurd record versus the NFC. But, you know, Lou Anarumo's a terrific defensive coordinator. The Bengals have, you know, had some good adjustments against the Ravens offense over the years. Obviously the Browns do as well. Like it's just interesting, the dichotomy, right? We play NFC teams and run roughshod over them. And then we play AFC North teams. And it's like playing your big brother or your little brother, maybe, like he knows all your tricks. And so
those AFC North teams have special players that have been drafted
specifically
in order to compete with Lamar Jackson. So JOK of the Browns is one of those. And I kind of think Wilson has been a Lamar killer since he's joined the league. And they've got a variety of players. Hendrickson has been someone who's been very effective against even against Ronnie Stanley, and was again in this game.
Yeah.
The offensive line, by the way, didn't have a really great game. They were okay, but they had a lot of penalties in this game. Every offensive line was penalized at least once. Did a decent job pass blocking, but when it really came down to it, it was still Lamar who took over the game with a performance that was way ahead of his opportunity set. We're going to get to that a little later, but he's on the kind of streak that's remarkable to see. I just did a little while we were, you know, in the production meeting, I just did a little player span check, and Lamar's last eight games are the second highest quarterback rating for an eight game span in NFL history.
I mean, that's amazing and somehow unsurprising. Who was number one?
Number one, Tom Brady in 2007. And then number two is Lamar Jackson. Number five is Lamar Jackson. Number seven is Lamar Jackson. Number 11 is Lamar Jackson. And there is some overlap in there. So three different spans in 2019 for Lamar are on there. And if he were to have another big game, there would be another span in 2024 here, but he's only had eight consecutive games that really meet the standard here so far. So
I was just having a conversation with Organized Chaos about how, does Organized Chaos go by his real name when he's on podcast with you?
I think people know him as Yoshi or
Yoshi, King Josh.
Yeah.
Okay. It's interesting to listen to TV announcers try to explain to their audiences why Lamar is better this year than he has been. And I applaud the effort, you know, and they're not trying to insult Lamar, but they keep doing it by saying that he's doing something this year that he's never shown before, like the touch passes or whatever. And none of what they say is true, because he is, you know, everything that they say that he hasn't done before, he has done before. To me, what's different about Lamar this year is the pre-snap phase,
yes,
and the quick game. And that's taking him to a whole nother level.
Right. We saw something that they pointed out immediately on the broadcast, and it was something we do not see often from Lamar Jackson, was a on-time throw to Bateman towards the right side where Bateman had not broken at the top of the route.
Yep.
If he adds that in a meaningful way, Bateman's production is going to go off the charts, because that's exactly what he needs to do that. But that on schedule throw where those two have to be on the same page there. And they said, you know, when you see a receiver and a quarterback, in sync like that, that's the whole problem with Bateman's career so far, is they have not been in sync. And, it's also a problem for Lamar, but it's a bigger problem for Bateman, who, you know, has lost a lot of money over that situation.
Right. Of the two of them, the Ravens are not going to cut loose Lamar to keep Bateman. Yes. Like, if one of their careers is in trouble there, we know who it's not. So the sideline interviewer stuck a microphone into Lamar's face at the end of the game. And she, at one point, she suggested that Zay Flowers didn't have that big a game. And Lamar interrupted her immediately to say that Zay Flowers drew a lot of defensive attention, which created opportunities for other players. So from his perspective, Zay did have a big game.
Good. I'm glad he should stick up for his receivers anytime that goes on. But second of all, I'm glad that he actually did that, because Zay obviously had a low yards per target in this game, like yards per target, ADOT in this game.
Right. Yep.
And you really want to see him having effect down the field. And I know there's some that was evident that Flowers was taking coverage, taking players away out of zones that Andrews caught balls in, for example. But it's nice to see Lamar recognize that after the game as well.
Even just the leadership aspect of you know, I'm being proactive to take care of any possible relationship and chemistry issues among this bunch. You know, I see your working dog. I appreciate you. Like, just even if it was a lie, it's an outstanding lie. And that there's an element of truth to it is, you know, good too.
I prefer there to be an element of truth to it. And he doesn't need to hit on every single person every single game. He can just and by the way, you can always find something good about a player in terms of their contributions. It's kind of like you can say something nice about anybody who works for you, Jim. You'd have fired them if they didn't have anything nice to say.
Right, but you're on national TV with a microphone stuck in your face,
so it gets a little harder.
But he was right on top of the potential implications of that and nipped it in the bud immediately, which I respected a lot.
Game where the Bengals didn't really simply stuff the box like they did the first time. The Bengals very much were at the line of scrimmage, trying for all sorts of simulated pressure opportunities in the last game, much, much less of that in this game. And in fact, Monken came to the table, I thought, in this game with some new scheme that was impressive in terms of unloading the box. And I remember when I'm at the ballpark, I said, there's only five guys, maybe six, in the box right now. You have to run at this. And then I came back and I looked at some of these 2x2 formations, which are way wide outside the numbers, and both receivers outside the numbers, and they're having to put four players outside the numbers. The most you could have would be seven, and they've got a free safety and whatnot. So they really only had five in the box on that play. So you got a five blockers. You got, you know, you can think of it as a 10 personnel formation because you don't have a true tight end. All four guys are wide. It basically puts you in a position to use what Henry does best. You're almost always going to get a level two first contact opportunity out of a play like that. And I think they did, and they might have had a 9 or 10 yard gain on that play. It was one of his Henry's better runs that they had. So it's great to see some of that. That's real adjustment to what's going on. And if you put those guys outside, you're going to give yourself a better chance to make plays if they decide to come up and crowd the box, or if you just want to run against it.
Do you find that defenses are? So I don't know the right way to ask this question, but when I have read over the last couple of years about different defensive schemes that were in vogue, like Brandon Staley, the former Chargers head coach, there was a lot of showing too high, but then rotating into something that stopped the run somehow. And defensive front seven players were doing gap and a half play. So this is defensive technique that I don't understand. But where I'm going is, do you see... You know, we hear a lot about deceptive coverages, you know, like a team showing man and falling into zone, or showing too high, but they're actually cover three or whatever, trying to fool the quarterbacks. Do you ever see deceptive run fronts, you know, that maybe show a gap and then take it away just at the snap or something like that? Do you see tactics like that used against the Ravens?
So... three teams have gone all out to stop the run against the Ravens, at least. But there was three teams in terms of Washington did it, Cincinnati did it, Tampa Bay did it. And those three teams all did it very similarly by spreading the line of scrimmage and staying very heavy and keeping defensive backs off the field in the case of Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay had only 4.15 defensive backs per play, which essentially says you're playing base all plays, including your third and long, you know. Yeah. So, you know, they'd gone to an extreme way to do it. And by the way, when I look at those numbers, I didn't analyze anything formation numbers for what the offense was presented with. I do that for the defense. I have all that information by play, but when I'm doing it for the offense and I'm looking at the opponents, all I'm doing is taking total snaps and divide by total snaps for each of the defensive backs and then dividing by total snaps in the game.
Right.
So I'm not, they might've had some ones and twos in there is what I'm telling you. If there was goal line plays that skewed it back towards, you know, 4.15, but it's still so extreme. Mm-hmm. They were basically playing a lot of base defense pretty much all the time. So they did that. The Commanders crowded the line of scrimmage and they just got beat by, you know, shredded by man coverage. A lot of people have made the comment that the pickup of Deontay Johnson is a way to make sure that teams lighten up the box because he's another man coverage beater. Now, we really haven't seen that yet. I mean, we've seen it, maybe him doing it for other teams, but so far, you know, he's been targeted twice with one reception here. In two games though. All I'm saying is we haven't seen it. That's all.
Yeah. Oop. Yeah.
Gotta be careful about that. but anyway, who was the third team? Tampa Bay Commanders. Oh yeah. And
Bengals.
Then the Bengals did it the first time around with a ton of simulated pressure. So they came to the line of scrimmage with eight, and they're dropping three, dropping four, doing all these things. That does show up on my offensive score sheet in terms of just how often they're doing simulated pressure. And it was some huge number. I want to say they might have done it 19 or 20 times where they dropped at least two. I mean, it was a big number.
So did they do that again this game?
No, not nearly as much. And I mean, the Ravens threw the ball 33 times. Hold on, let me get my score sheet real quick. I'll tell you how many times they did it, but it was definitely a change in philosophy. Yeah, the pass rushes, I'm just going to read them off to you. They're 40, 40, 50, 40, 40, 60, 40, 40, 60, 40, 40, 60, 40, 40, 60, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40, 40,
Oh.
So they only had one or zero the entire game. So basically, I'm telling you, they didn't have any simulated pressures, because simulated pressures, as I define it, is 2+.
Okay.
So it's a complete antithesis of their first plan. So I think,
well, considering what they gave up in the first game. Yes, exactly. Absolutely.
Exactly. So they said, we need a new plan.
And they came in with a new plan, and it was initially quite successful.
Yes. Yeah, it was. That's a sad thing. I mean, both teams really worked hard with the four-man pass rush, and the Ravens ended up beating the four-man pass rush, and the four-man pass rush for the Ravens was fairly effective for the most part. It got these in pressure, but the thing about the pass rush, this really showed up on the defensive show, is that the addition of Travis Jones really was very key to having that four-man pressure be very effective. And they were still even more effective when they either rushed five, which was not very often, or when they tried a blitz, a stunt, or a simulated pressure. All elements of deception plus numbers, all of them were better results than just a basic four.
Yeah.
And the part that was a little frustrating was the basic four. You drop seven into coverage, you figure you can get picked up by your coverage unit, particularly relative to the pressures you get. So like if you rush five and get a pressure, you expect the opposing quarterback to still do better with that in terms of being able to beat it, in terms of what the secondary's responsibility is, if you get my drift.
Then if you rush four plus one, because yeah, you well, have
it's a numeric advantage in coverage. It's a seven versus six in coverage. Yeah. Yeah. You expect them to do better that way. And that was where the Ravens secondary really let them down in this game. I mean, it's visible to anybody who's watching Ja'Marr Chase run free and, you know, is consistently getting beat, but beating people, but it was a combination of coverage breakdowns and I guess that was it more than anything, but a general weakness between level two and three that is hard to pin on anybody. Even I've been a little bit hard on Stevens, and I think maybe I've been too hard on him, in fact, relative to what's going on around him. It's just it's very bad around him. And yeah, what he's giving up is actually our third or fourth biggest problem.
So I know that this is not the defensive show, but I was listening to a football show. I think it was the Mina Kimes show, and it was Dominique Foxworth, but somebody was saying that Stevens is playing pretty good technique, but he's small at the catch point. So like he's there, he's kind of where he should be, but he can't really contest. And, you know, when the quarterbacks make good throws to big receivers, like he's where he should be, but he can't win those matchups at the catch point.
He's very sticky, and he finds the ball, and he's not bad at contesting the ball in the hands. And he throws a defensive radius, like a catch radius. He throws a cloud of defensive radius,
right,
that the opposing quarterback sees and doesn't want to risk an interception in. But quarterbacks, now the word is out. The back shoulder is his big weakness, and you know the teams can go back to that. Of course, you know the back shoulder is you play another down kind of reception. So
yes,
those guys.
It's not the thing that Ja'Marr Chase has been doing.
Yep.
Did wow. Yeah.
So there'd be some dispute on some of the longer catches, particularly some of the long crossers and where Stevens gave them up. But he didn't give up any really long plays in this game. He got beat for a number of receptions, but most of them were coming back towards the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. Keaton Mitchell, excited to see him back.
I'm shocked to see him back, and I am still skeptical of like how much can he possibly, how can he be remotely as explosive as he was last year? Mm-hmm. And let me phrase this correctly. I am thrilled for the young man to come off of that devastating injury and to be able to resurrect his career. And I'm beyond excited for what he's going to show us next year. Mm-hmm. Having said that, he's not going to, it is not possible to improve over what Derrick Henry has already provided us this year. And Justice Hill has not been as good carrying the ball, but he's been an amazing, it's been a huge help. Great pass blocker, great third down back. So I would have rather, you know, it's great that Keaton Mitchell came back. I'm delighted. But I would much rather Jadeveon Clowney came back or Calais Campbell came back or, you know, Buda Baker came, you know, like I don't mean to disrespect Keaton Mitchell, but no, I'm not excited particularly to see him back.
All right. Well, I think that's a measured thing. I'm more excited about the upside than I am about what I think might happen this year. And I share your opinion that it's probably next year. If the Ravens are to get something out of him, it'd be adding another layer of misdirection to this offense and improving the places where Flowers can be targeted, because Flowers is still on a lot of these screen passes. And hey, Keaton Mitchell could be part of that. And Keaton Mitchell could be in a pony backfield where he's not even lined up in the backfield with Derrick Henry. Or you could even have some plays where Derrick Henry's a blocker for Keaton Mitchell if you run him split behind the quarterback.
Well, I also have some concern about the workload on the 30-year-old running back. So if Keaton Mitchell can take some, you know, be effective carrying the ball for, I don't know, 5-10 carries a game or something.
That's way too many. Yeah.
Is that okay? Well, 3-6 carries a game, you know, like something that, you know, reduces Henry's workload. Because I want Henry in December and January. I'm thrilled with him now, but that's when we're going to really need him.
Yeah, I'm all for that. And in a lot of ways, I'd be happy if Henry... It's probably sacrilege to say so, but I don't really want him making a run at 2105 this year, or even at 2000. That's going to be, oh yeah, I need to play in week 18. I mean, it's the last freaking thing I want. And it may be that game's important for winning the division, in which case all the Ravens will play it and they'll take the chance together. And, you know, they'll probably have to play that on the wild card game the very next week. You know, if that's what it comes down to, then that's what it comes down to. But want to make sure they get a home game. And honestly, at this point, you know, we ought to talk about the AFC position. But at this point, to me, the goal should be pretty clear for the Ravens, that they should be trying for the 2 seed. I think, in fact, if you're rooting at home for individual wins and losses, go ahead and root for the Chiefs the rest of the way, because the Ravens aren't catching them, not 3 games back and with the tiebreaker lost. But they can catch Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh's got a very tough schedule the rest of the way. What do you think? Do they need 2 wins against Pittsburgh to take the North?
I do think they need 2 wins against Pittsburgh. I don't believe that we can trust I would not like to rely on not getting 2 wins against Pittsburgh.
That I'll go with. I think there's still a chance they could win it splitting with Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And it'll be one of the interesting things. They have a tough schedule, but so do the Ravens. And it's not just Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh is a big part of the Ravens' tough schedule. So we'll see how that plays out. And then the other really big game this year for the Ravens will be played on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, whichever it is, the Wednesday right around Christmas, that they somehow, the NFL decided there'd be a football game that day. The Ravens got screwed into playing it on the road. It's a tough short week there, but winning that game against Houston is going to be a very big deal.
Yeah. And Houston just got Nico Collins back. I think Nico Collins just got activated tonight.
Ooh. Okay, not happy about that. All right.
Did you, so I'm sorry, I believe you've already recorded the defense show, although it hasn't. Did you talk at all about, it is that, I'm sorry. Yeah. Did you talk about trade deadline activity?
We did. We talked a fair amount about, you're talking about Deontay Johnson, you're talking about, whatever you got to bring up, let's talk about it now. What's on your mind?
Why the hell didn't we get help for the pass rush defensive front? I know that they tried to get Calais Campbell. I know that they tried the player who went to the Commanders, the corner.
Marshawn Lattimore.
I know that they made a run at him. That's fine. But like, Calais Campbell's not the only defensive front player who was, you know, could have potentially helped things.
Yeah, Campbell was kind of the perfect player because of his age and where Miami is right now. You think,
and his inside outside versatility, like he's a, you know, he does both things.
Yeah, I'm the Raven. Where the Ravens need help, and it really showed up in this last game, that the Ravens need help on the inside. They need to get those snaps covered and allow, you know, get as many of the critically important snaps given to Travis Jones as possible. He was great this last game. Looked like he was 80% or better at pushing off of that knee. And he really looked very dominant, including that amazing 2-point conversion play getting right in Burrow's face, whether or not you think it was a penalty. And it probably was. So I'm not denying it. I'm not a penalty denier.
I think the thing that the announcers were saying about the defensive hold on the tight end, I think that was not a penalty. I think he flopped. But I think that bopping the quarterback in the face mask after the release of the ball, that, you know, there's a pretty good argument that that could have been a penalty. Right.
And there might have been a holding call against Owe, I think it was, by the left tackle too. So there were a lot of potential for flags in this game that didn't get thrown. But of
this
course,
was not a game to reinforce the Ravens fan narrative that the refs screw us all the time.
I agree with that. That was not a game for that. But yes, it was not a game for that. The Ravens still, I believe even after this game, still lead the league in net penalty yards against. So they were 32nd before the game anyway. So I don't think their position changed in this game. There was a fair amount of distance between them and the next team. And the Ravens, I think, were out penaltied. Anyway, let me look at it real quick. But I think they got more penalties in this game than the Bengals did. So the Bengals were penalized. Yeah, Bengals were penalized 3 for 23, and the Ravens were penalized 11 for 81. So yeah, they picked up some more penalties in this game.
Is this a good segue into the illegal man downfield penalties on the offensive line?
Why don't we do that in part two? Frustrating, but we're going to talk about the offensive line, obviously. Extremely frustrating.
Okay.
Ravens lost a snap count 75-58, which also relates to the defensive line that, you know, you have four DL active. One of them is Jones. You really have, we'll call it 3.8 defensive linemen active, because you don't really know. And then you end up playing 75 snaps, and Jones plays 50, and Matabike plays 56. I mean, those are not numbers that are usually conducive to good defensive line play.
So two things, right? Because I feel like the Bengals were trying to stay on the field. They were trying to, at least in the first half. I mean, like, you know, when Ja'Marr Chase started, you know, doing the explosive, like, one play touchdown drives. Okay, that's one thing. But I thought in the first half, the Bengals were trying to matriculate the ball downfield and play Greg Roman's ball control game and keep Lamar off the field, which, you know, coupled with the Ravens going three and out and stuff like that, like, really just created the snap count. I'm going to call it a problem, the snap count problem that you just referred to, that you just described.
Right. Yeah, it's funny how the word matriculate becomes used some way by it used to be Norm Crosby was the comedian who would always misuse words intentionally.
Yes. This is a quote from a particular football.
Hank Stram.
Yes. Yeah,
Super Bowl IV. There's two famous lines from that. One is 65 toss power trap, which is the play they kept calling. It's kind of like counter tray for the Redskin teams. And the other one was keep matriculating the ball down the field. It's like, you don't know what that word means. I do not believe you're using that word correctly.
But, it was sticky, you know, like we all say it now. And it means like we know what it means. Football fans know what it means.
Oh, now we do, sure. And I've gotten some heat over the years. Shask gives me trouble from the RSR boards about using the word race car to describe a package. And some people call it penny. And I know it is used in probably 75% of quarters in the NFL. Use penny as a description of what I call jumbo nickel with three down linemen, only one inside linebacker. But jumbo nickel is more descriptive of what it is. So it's,
But race car was coined, copyrighted, whatever. There was a team in recent years who like played that package.
NASCAR is what they often called it. So race car is something of my own thing. It was kind of a progressive description of the number of outside linebackers on the field. You had race car diamond, race car nickel were both possible. And I could have called them NASCAR diamond, NASCAR nickel, but anyway.
That's a proper name. That's a copyrighted organization.
There you go. You make up the word, you use the word first. You have some possibility to do that. Anyway, we've been talking, I don't think I want to go over the kickoffs in the end zone, but I do feel like the Ravens have, once again, in this game, they're making sacrifices for special teams depth. In this case, they really ended up being short of defensive linemen. They could have had Chris Wormley up again. Might have been a case where they're trying to apportion out the activations for Wormley because they know how valuable their slots on the 53 are. But I think they're probably overvaluing a player like Braid, who probably does not just get picked up by another team if you cut him and put him on the practice squad. He might not stay there the whole season. Somebody might need him at some point. And some team who's going to face the Ravens might say, let's learn what the Ravens are doing on special teams and we'll and bring in Braid. But I haven't been a fan of the way they've sacrificed for special team depth.
I mean, and the new kickoff rules have really, to me, changed the value proposition of a coverage guy. I mean, you can just put it in the end. I mean, you know what I mean? Like there's less returns now, right, than there ever have been.
I think less returns, less variance of return.
Yeah.
So you're, Yeah, and if your choice, I mean, the other team can impose their will on you and give you a bunch of short kicks that you have to return.
Yes. Yeah, but in terms of when you're kicking off,
you always have the option. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's you got to cover punts. You got to sure. Return punts. So you do need some of these guys. I'm not saying you can go with zero or anything. I just think it's worth taking a chance and being one short there, as opposed to the risk of being one short of the defensive line, which is truly cataclysmic when it happens.
Yeah. So there are it is common on the RSR board to talk about John Harbaugh was outcoached on this or that occasion. And largely, I think that we don't know what we're talking about when we say that. Uh-huh. But there are small marginal situations. And I think here is a situation where maybe Harbs' focus on special teams, has been overtaken by events in terms of the NFL rule changes. And here's a chance where maybe he is not, optimizing the roster decisions, pursuant to the way the game is played today in that particular area.
I would totally buy that. I would totally back that opinion. I think that, in most ways, Harbaugh really has shown a lot of growth as a coach.
It's amazing.
He's done all sorts of things different in terms of analytics, which means he's listening to the headset elves a lot. And he's also varied it by how good the team is. When the team's very good, he takes less risk. When he takes a low variance outcome with a high understanding of what's going on, whether that's kicking off, whether going for a fourth down, whatever it might be. The 2015 Ravens, which was a pretty darn bad football team, particularly after the injuries started piling up, they took a ton of risk and it was appropriate.
Yeah. Yep. So, anyway. And then you also see things like last year's London trip. You think back to how they managed the previous London trip where they got blown out by the Jaguars and they did a 180 and handled this London trip completely differently. Now, perhaps over reasoning from too small a sample size, but you take your input, you adjust, you get a different result. Like Harbaugh is very responsive to those kinds of things or has demonstrated that in the last couple of years. And so, But in this narrow thing, I think maybe he's getting tiny, tiny little bit outcoached just on this front.
That's I think that's fair. I think he did some other things that were not all that smart in this game, and one of them trying to challenge the play that was 3 yards from the 5 to the 2 yard line is one a risk I wouldn't have taken, even though I thought it was a sure thing. It's still even if it's one of your three challenges, even if it's not one of your two challenges, even if you don't blow them both. So, it's a risk of a timeout, which it ended up being, if the call goes against you.
About that this week in the media, and he said that defensively from their defensive design, their defensive rules, whatever, defending from the 4 to the goal line is very different for them from defending from the 2 to the goal line.
Well, that's certainly true. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was worth it to him. I don't know that his reasoning was correct, but he did have reasoning. It wasn't just gut.
Okay. All right. Well, that's I'm glad to hear that he thought about it at that level. I'm still not sure with what I know about the ball placement at a particular yard line that I agree with him.
Yeah.
All right. And there are other. I think. First of all, I'm a huge Harbaugh fan, and I think that most of the people who say Harbaugh is an idiot are majoring in minors. What's really important about what happened in that football game? I'll tell you, the most important thing is that John Harbaugh is 9-0 playing on Thursday Night Football, which is generally against some of the best teams in the National Football League that you'll play that game. And he's got to get his team peaking at the right time of day. He's always been great at that in prime time. Mm-hmm. London trip you mentioned. Those are things people just hand wave by. Oh, that's not important. It's this 5 versus the 2 yard line.
Yes. Yeah. So, and they showed, sometimes Ravens media will come out with like a Harbaugh locker room speech after a victory or whatever. Mm-hmm. I didn't see a long one, but I saw a short segment where he was ending with, as they faded out, he was ending with, let's take care of our bodies and get the appropriate amount of rest so we're ready to jump out of our skin on Thursday, at 8 o'clock on Thursday night or whatever. Like that's explicit messaging that, and they knew what he meant by that. So he had laid the groundwork for that messaging, weeks and months ago. Yeah, there's coaching going on that we fans tend to downplay, not appreciate.
The other thing you hear all the time is if a coordinator does something stupid, it's Harbaugh's fault.
Right.
But if a coordinator does something positive, it doesn't have anything to do with Harbaugh.
Right, exactly. And it's a coincidence. Harbaugh was a passenger for that.
And you know, if you've been a department head ever, then you know. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
That the results of your unit are yours anyway.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean necessarily that one of your employees can't screw up and make you look very bad.
Monken talked in the offseason. He had an interview, a long interview, like an hour. He was on a podcast with a couple guys, and he talked about his stint as a head coach in college. And he talked about incidents that his interviewers knew about, like the time he bought suits for the entire graduating class so that they could, you know, go on interviews. And he talked about how, you know, you strive to take care of your players and how important that is. So, intelligent guy, right? With a lot of, you know, thoughts to different angles about how to impact his football team. He said that on the plane home from London last year, Harbs called the offensive staff forward or back on the plane, wherever he was. And he told them, we've got to do better in the red zone. We cannot be requiring Lamar to make magic every damn time down there. We have to have, you know, better play calling, better scheme for them. And, you know, he said, and, you know, coach tells you that, then you go straight to the whiteboard. You go straight to the office when you get off the plane. So he's doing stuff that we don't know about. And the idea that he could be a passenger along for the ride over a 17-year career with, you know, winning seasons,
so and division ridiculous.
Absurd. It can't.
That is a great way to lay it out, though. I shouldn't have interrupted, but it's so freaking ridiculous what people will
so say. This is not video, but, you know, you could see me just rubbing my forehead in frustration at some of this.
All right, let's talk.
So we're going to be watching his Hall of Fame, you know, induction in about 10 years, assuming that they break the seal and get another Super Bowl, and maybe even if they don't.
10 years.
Yeah.
Maybe. I would not put it past him to still be coaching at that point, but it is possible. It could be as soon as 10 years. Yeah.
I had a verbal tilde on that, like about, you know, give okay. or take.
Got it. Okay. Let's talk about the receivers a little bit. They had a few things about this. We're going to talk about Lamar in a few minutes, but 180 yak among the 290 yards of passing. Obviously, a lot of that came on the 84-yard reception, right, which was probably 5 plus 79 or something. But that's 62.1% of the passing yards were on yak. That has been like trending down during this Lamar hot streak, as he's had more mid-level receptions, which required less yak, and fewer of these, you know, little out to the side screen passes where either Justice Hill or Zay Flowers is making some big yardage. I know you have some statistics also you want to talk about.
I hand calculated success rates for the players in this game, and
let's talk about success rate, and as you define it here, is this an EPA based or is this a yardage by down basis?
This is a yardage by down basis. So this is the thing that Aaron Schatz publicized some years ago at Football Outsiders. It's a play that keeps you on schedule. Mm-hmm. So it's a success if you gain 40% of the to-go yards on first down, 40% or more. On second down, if you gain 60%, which some sites
of the remaining yards, yes,
of the remaining yards of the to go, yeah. So if it's second and 10, you gain 6 yards, that's a success. Six or more, that's a success. You gain less, that is not considered a success.
And on second third and down, 2, you only need 1 yard to be a success.
Well, so some.
Oh no, you need 2 yards. You need 2 yards, right?
Second and 3, you need 2 yards. It's 60%. Yeah. So some sites define 50%, which I find more logical, but PFR adopted Schatz's definition. So it's semi-official now. So I'm using that.
Go with that. That's all the standard we know. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And 100% on third down or fourth down, and that play is a success. So that stat was originally introduced by Schatz for running backs. The idea being, you know, yards per carry, you know, if you plunge your running back into the line 10 times and he gains, you know, 2 yards in a cloud of dust, but then he busts an 80-yard one, his yards per carry is going to look great, but his per play success rate is not very good. So he didn't do a great job of keeping the chains moving. And so that's why success rate is useful when it's hand in hand with yards per carry. And so then the innovation that Pro Football Reference made, I think 2 seasons ago now, is they started using it across the board. So they're now posting it on their wide receiver stat pages. They're posting it on their quarterback stat pages. And to me, it's opened up, you know, worlds for looking at these players. So I did go through the box score just because the stats weren't available when I wanted to look at this Thursday night. And the receiver that led the team in successes on receptions was Rashad Bateman with 6 receptions, 6 mm-hmm. successes on receptions. Mark Andrews was 2nd with 4 successes. And then there weren't many other than that. Tylan Wallace had 2. Zay Flowers had 2. Nelson Agholor and Justice Hill each had 1. Those are very low numbers for such a great passing day. You know, that's so not Bateman, a high total of sixes.
Every single one of his receptions was a success. Correct. Then. And 6 Correct. Out of 8. That's good. That's really good.
Yeah, so he was 75%. Go ahead.
He didn't have a big yardage game, and you know, he's been a great yards per target receiver this year, but it's been, you know, I think everything that goes well for Bateman is good for the Ravens. First of all, he signed for 3 years, 2 more after this. The contract is one of the most valuable in football. If he ends up being a, you know, a solid approaching 1,000 yard guy, he's right up there in terms of his contract value as of this moment, with 2.5 seasons left on that contract, as just about anybody you could pick in the National Football League.
And you're emphasizing the denominator there, right? The per dollar spent. Because obviously, like, Jamar Chase is, you know, more valuable in a
It's not even a denominator. Think about it this way. It's an arithmetic subtraction from his actual value. So if I had 2.5 years of Bateman and he performed as he is now for 2.5 more years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you'd get value from that player that's enormous for a total of what is probably about $12 million left on that contract. Mm-hmm. And whereas if you pay even the top receiver in the league, pick who that is, Justin mm-hmm. Jefferson or somebody like right. that, you end up having to pay, or Tyreek Hill, you end up paying him $25 or $30 million now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You don't get nearly the same value. And that's why you can't.
Get more that player, but not as much more as the dollars you're
exactly
spending.
No, not as much surplus value relative right. to cap.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Anything else on successes?
Yeah, let me just rattle off these success rates then, if you don't mind. So we had Bateman at 75%, Tylan Wallace at two-thirds, 66.7%, Mark Andrews at 57%. These are success rates I'm talking about. Aguilar and Hill at 50%, and Zay Flowers, not a great game, only one-third, 33% of his were successful.
Okay, a little bit of a bummer there, but you know, some of that's on how that pass is thrown. Whether they're complete, obviously, is the biggest single factor in notes. And in Flowers got let down on one of Lamar's passes that sailed well wide early in the game.
Well, and I also don't think it's also, you know, the defense was keying on Flowers, which is one reason why Bateman had such a successful day. And it says something about the offense that, you know, its adjustability, like Bruce Lee will say, flow like water or whatever, you know, you go where the defense isn't. And, you know, so other players had a big day. It's a great testament, I think, to what they've structured on offense, even if Zay Flowers maybe didn't enjoy it from a statistical, you know, volume day.
All right. Great day for the Ravens again in the red zone. They just had their way with the Bengals down there. You know, some of it is Lamar's magic, and that 8 or 9 yard run, whatever it was, that got him down to the 1 yard line.
Didn't they say it's like a 38 or a 50 yard run by Next Gen Stats if you added up like the line that he traveled?
Yeah, I think it might have been over 50 yards. They said, you know, he had to go way back and then he had to go forward. So anyway, it's about as incredible as you can ever see. And it's just, there's an overreaction to Lamar that's going on by the players around him. It's like, I'm not going to give up my leverage. And then Lamar is by them because they won't give up their leverage. And in particular, the player who was briefly obstructed by Linderbaum and then not so, you know, up that right sideline, it was like basically he gave up his shot to get Lamar just to make sure that he didn't lose the inside of the field to Lamar. And it's a weird, you know, dynamic that he has, that he's so scary that he almost paralyzes the defender in some of these situations. It's not like, you know, yes, even has to make the defender commit, which is the classic thing we think about Lamar, reading leverage, any kind of commitment by the defender. Lamar has the answer for it because he reads that leverage so quickly.
But he isn't just reading leverage to a certain extent. He's 5 yards before that dictating leverage.
Yes.
Because if you watch him on his long runs, like he's got his eyes on not the first defender, but like the second and third defender. Yeah. And he's showing them, oh, I'm going to deke inside, you know, and they, you know, so he's, you know, like a basketball player, you know, making fake moves or jab steps or whatever. He's creating some of that.
Yeah. First of all, I agree with that. And that's exactly your description of that is very good. And that's what great receivers do at the top of the routes. And that's what Bateman does at the top of the route. It's not what Flowers does. Flowers gets by on a suddenness. Bateman basically tries to make the defender make a mistake at the top of the route, which is very nice.
You see great running backs. Now, I did not appreciate this, but I was reading a lot of the draft analyst Matt Waldman describing how you can see Derrick Henry do this with blockers. He, you know, for a defender that's beyond the current blocker, he will show like I'm sorry to the podcasters on radio, I'm gesturing with my hands to like, but he will show that he's going to run outside, drawing the inside linebacker to that spot, and then he will cut back inside, and the linebacker's now hung up on the block that he would not have been hung up on had Henry just gone straight to that hole.
Right.
Justin Forsett used to do this way back when. Like he would show himself in one hole to draw a tackler and then cut it back to the first gap, which was now blocked because he brought that defender to the blocker by what he showed on his path. It's quite extraordinary. Once you start to look for it, it's amazing.
Yeah, you see Lamar setting up pass blocks in the pocket with Justice Hill in that first game against Chris Jones. You know, it's a mismatch of a thing, but you know, Lamar is going up and back to try and set him up so that he has a little bit of extra pocket time. All right, you got to keep moving on here. 4-4 in the red zone, up to 76.7% for the year. Cincinnati's second in the entire NFL at 72.4%. The Ravens are, this is amazing. This is one of the amazing numbers from this year. 5.91 points per drive when they get inside the red zone. Think about that. That means if you get inside the 20, you have to get actually to the 19-yard line before it counts to be in the red zone. Being in the 20 does not count as being in the red
Interesting.
Zone.
Interesting. Okay.
We had that come up, and there was an interception that was thrown from the 20 earlier this year by Lamar.
Okay.
One of the ones, I think it's the one that bounced off Andrew's hands.
But it didn't hurt him in this stat. So you're
saying. No, it didn't hurt him in the stat. That's what's right. really important. It didn't hit him in this stat we're going to talk about. But anyway, 5.91 points per drive. That's most of a touchdown, but not an mm-hmm. extra point.
Yep.
You know, from every single possession, which is truly astounding. And the other big.
Can I tell you one of the most fun things to watch Ravens get? Like, I have never watched a team that scores touchdowns when they get down there so reliably, and it is so relaxing. It is, you know, like we've watched struggles in the red zone, and there are a few things yep. that are more frustrating, and it's just a breath of fresh air. They just put it in the end zone, and you're like, yes, it's just football is so much fun when they're putting it in the damn end zone.
So many great stories about the great Flacco era and pre-Flacco era teams relate to this, but I'm just going to toss one out there. Haloti Ngata's first NFL game had an interception and returned the ball 60 yards. And he was plodding down the left field in that opener at Tampa Bay in 2006. Very hot day, tough for him.
Sure.
And he all of a sudden, I mean, the guy is, he's not carrying one piano. He's carrying three. And sure. You know, he's a Haloti Ngata. It's worse than that. And then all of a sudden, some other players came over close to him. And he just kind of decided to walk out of bounds at the 9 yard line, I think, or he was inside the 10. And the Ravens offense dutifully turned that into 3 points. And and my immediate feeling about it is, you know, he's got to do something differently. He's got to hand off the football. He's got to figure out how to get in the end zone. Whatever you got to do, you turn yourself into a blocker, hand the ball to the next guy next to you.
Did you say it was his rookie season?
First NFL game.
Yeah, so he didn't know yet the burden that the Ravens defense carried in those years. I mean, it was an awful play, but he, you know.
All right, we'll let him off the hook after
I'm sure he got his fair amount of grief and kangaroo court over that and had to make a
contribution. I think he did. I think, you know, they asked Harbaugh about it after, not Harbaugh, Billick about it after the game. Yeah. And Billick said he's got to find a way to get in the end zone there. And you know, that whole era of defense, one of the things that they were really great at is playing fast break defense. They were looking to score, looking to lateral, and frankly, the players there, you might not like the fact that Ed Reed would occasionally fumble on interception, but I'll tell you what. Those risks he took had very much positive expectation for the Ravens relative to what the offense could have done.
God, yeah.
All right.
We should probably keep it moving.
Yeah, we do. Points per drive, the Ravens are up to 3.0. That's a really hallmark number. I feel like mm-hmm. I have to mention it when they're at. Yep. They've got exactly 318 points in 106 drives. It does exclude certain drives that are kneel outs. So, for instance, mm-hmm. the kneel out to end the game wouldn't have counted.
So I think people might not understand this, but when you look historically, when you look at points per drive, the great offenses over the course of NFL history average around a field goal per drive. And that's what makes them great. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but we're talking every drive.
Oh, and it never happened before very recently. It took a low turnover era to make that work. So it's and really it's more than that. It's a high passing efficiency era as well. You need to be very scary always with three downs. The Lamar Jackson offense, which got to 3.08 in 2019, which is the Ravens record, was a four down offense. It wasn't yep. even a three down offense. So you know they were like, oh, third and five. You think you got us? Well, we might run. We might pass. We'll probably run and
then two down territory. Yeah, we can pick up three and then two. No problem.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about Lamar a little bit. We just talked about this in the production meeting, but since the Dallas game in week three, Lamar has 136.
Oh, I'm sorry. 10. Can we stick with receivers for one more second?
Sure.
This game marked the sixth consecutive game that the Ravens had a receiver over 100 yards. In prior seasons, the Ravens have never had more than three consecutive games
Incredible.
With a pass catcher over 100 yards. They've done that six times in prior years. Most recently, Mark Andrews' great season. 2021, that was the most recent time, but they've doubled that this year. It's been Say Flowers, Say Flowers, Say Flowers, Bateman, Flowers again, and Tylan Wallace,
yeah.
Six games.
All right. So this now becomes the appropriate time to also mention, and I forgot to put this in my notes, so I got to do it now before I forget, that the Ravens did fall short of the Fangio line in this game, that they ended up with only 99 yards rushing. And how did that happen? They had 100 yards rushing and they were forced. They weren't forced to, but they kneeled on the final play of the game. So they had 42 consecutive games. They needed this game would have tied the record, which they already hold with the Steelers.
Their record. Yeah.
But it would have meant that they could have gone into Pittsburgh next week and set the record against the Steelers, which would have been oh so cool and delicious. But it didn't. it didn't work out that way. And I think the Ravens have had enough. One of the things I really appreciated from Harbaugh is that they haven't, they've acted like they're adults in the room when games have been like, Todd Bowles paid the price for not being an adult in the room with his team. McDermott, on the other hand, at Buffalo, it's as if the two of them had a mind meld. They played the last 7-17 of the Buffalo game. Mm-hmm. On 11 plays is all it took for seven wow. minutes and 17 seconds. So that tells you both teams looking to get the game over with.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little Lamar. Since week three, he's on an incredible heater, 136.1 passer rating, the second highest of all time for any 8-game span. Only the 2007 Brady, 136.2, just a hair above. During that span, 22 touchdowns, one interception, 10.1 yards per attempt, and a 71.4% completion percentage.
So he, in this game, Lamar's first pass of the second half fell incomplete. Mm-hmm. And from then on, he had a perfect passer rating day. I think he completed over 80% with like 12 yards per attempt.
He was over 140 for the night. So
anything that includes Wallace's play.
I'll talk a little bit about the pass rush the Broncos used, because I thought this was a little bit interesting. They really used a conservative
Broncos number.
The Bengals used moderate numbers. They used 3 on 4 plays, and the Ravens got 7.3 yards per play on that. They used 4 24 times. The Ravens got 9.5 yards per play on that. They used 5 twice, 7.0. They used 6-3 times for 6.0, and they only averaged, I did not write it down here, but it's about 4.15 or thereabouts average rushers per play resulting in a pass or sack.
Can you say that again?
It's about 4.15.
Okay. So that's low.
That's very low. Yeah. So the point was that the Ravens shouldn't have really needed a lot of chip blocking and set blocking in this game, but they ended up using 0.70 per play. That's actually a moderate number, 0.70 set and chips, but you shouldn't have to use that much if the team's dropping 7. And this also, you know, goes to the Cincinnati's difference in game plan, is they were much more about trying to defend Lamar's passing with 7 than trying to play this man coverage, which didn't work in the first game, crowd the line of scrimmage and make sure that Henry and Lamar mesh point did not beat them in the run game.
So two things about that, I guess. One is Trey Hendrickson, you know, I think chipping some is responsible. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a prudent decision. And I would rather chip a little too much with that guy in the field than too little.
Yeah.
But then it's also interesting that without that kind of dedicated anti-run formation from the defense, Henry was still largely held in check compared to Derrick Henry. So he didn't really gash them.
Yeah, I would agree. I think if they looked at these two game plans, they say we got to play Baltimore again, I think their game plan would be closer to what they just played, than what it was in the first game. So they certainly did better. ATS BOQ pressure 11, 11, and 11. Never seen that before. I can't remember the last time I've seen it before. 11, 11, and 11. ATS BOQ and pressures for the game.
Ball out quick, ample time and space, and
pressure.
Okay.
Yeah. So pressure.
Oh, 33 plays, and it was a third, a third, a third across
the board. So one of the things about that is, since it's 8.5, 6, and 3.5, that when it's even like that, or even anytime the pressures and the ATSs are even, in fact, 6.0 is the yards of expectation you should have per play. And Lamar did a lot better than that. So Lamar, with ample time and space, actually did worse than expectation. He had 8 of 11 complete for 75 net yards, 6.8 yards per play. That's about 1.7 yards below on a third of his attempts. Then with ball out quick, he was somewhat better, 74 yards on those, and 6.7 yards per play. It's one yard less than his ATS opportunities, the same number of opportunities, but also it's higher than the expectation, which is about 6 yards per play on that. And then with pressure, he should get about 3.5 yards per play. And he went 7 of 11 for 141 yards, 12.8 yards per play.
Was the Tylan Wallace catch and run a pressure play?
Yes. Right. I mean, you know it had to be because he's got 84 on that play and he's 75 yeah. and 74 on the first two quarters. Yeah. So, yeah.
But still, the other, no, I mean, the 11 of, what did you say?
11 of 33.
How many completions, what completion percentage on the pressured?
7 of 11. That's good. That's high.
That's quite good.
And,
yeah.
And, you know, obviously he didn't have any sacks in there. So you don't even have the full denominator necessarily. But yeah, over 20 yards of completion on those pressures. So that was good. Outperformed his opportunity set by 92 yards. And this is the key thing that's been showing up for Lamar week after week after week. He was 2.8 yards per pass above expectation. Last week against Denver, 8.0 yards per pass above expectation. Yeah. Got a few more things. Next gen, 3.28 time to throw. You know, they're playing a Thursday night game, so we don't have other comparisons, but that's very high for the league this year. And 6.6% above his expected completion percentage. You know, if you're looking at how the Ravens spread the ball around the field in this game, would you have any criticisms? I mean, they you know, in terms of...
No, you mean like using, like, are you talking about areas of the field targeted or players getting
both.
Chances?
Both.
I wouldn't. I mean, so I didn't look at his heat chart, but you know, certainly I believe 9 players caught passes. I didn't have any grounds for such complaint before you said anything. Should I?
No, I don't. I really don't believe so. I mean, I think they pretty much are adjusting to the opponent. I like the, you know, what we talked earlier about the having the really wide 2x2 sets that mm-hmm. allowed some running from Derrick Henry. I think they did a pretty good job of understanding their opponent the second time. And I think honestly, the Bengals did the same thing. They came in and they understood who the Ravens were.
It was a really good divisional game. Like if you were just a fan of football and were not related to any of these AFC North teams and this game showed up on your Thursday night schedule, you would have felt quite pleased by what you saw, I think.
Yeah, they you know, they're calling it an instant classic already, and they're right. I mean, it was a great football game.
Yeah.
And it just becomes a great double asterisk to a Ravens fan.
Yes.
So anyway, let's talk a little bit about scheme and results here. We saw Mitchell only get 2 carries in this game, Hill 22 and Henry 39. No Pony in this game at all, which is kind of a bummer, but maybe they'll go to some of it in the coming weeks.
I don't have any particular allegiance to Pony. I just like seeing him score.
Okay. Well, I like seeing him score too, but I'm thinking that they really want Keaton Mitchell to layer in an extra element of misdirection into this offense. And that's where I think he does it. He does it extremely well, just being in jet motion, crossing the quarterback about the time the ball is snapped, and then freeing up Flowers, of course, to do different things to the defense downfield.
I love it, but I always wonder who you're taking off the field.
That's
for that.
Fair. Very fair. Very fair. It's just they have not shown the ability or propensity to get both receiving tight ends on the field at the same time. So it ends up being you get one of Andrews or Likely. They do have them on the field sometimes together. And you get one of Ricard and Kolar more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
So you're still kind of picking 1A and 1B. I mean, a player from column A and a player from column B to put on the field at the same time. And if you're talking about replacing one of them and either going, five at the line of scrimmage with a naked tight end situation to put on Pony, or perhaps taking your flex tight end out of there and letting your line guy still run a play action route of some sort, I'm just in favor of it. I think the misdirection is what makes the Lamar Henry mesh point even that much better. And they have multiple ways to do it. They can obviously do jet motion from multiple players. They run a lot of counters and a lot of pulls to do it.
Yeah.
You don't know which way the ball is going when the Ravens pull. I love any misdirection component that creates a readable misalignment by Lamar of a player. I think
when it includes speed, like Mitchell is just blazingly fast and Henry's, you know, certainly a size speed combo. So yeah, I see that. My only constant hesitation with all of this is I love that, but talking specifically about the combination of Mark Andrews and Patrick Ricard on the field together, Patrick Ricard does not obviously have the skill speed mm-hmm. you know component to his game, but he solves enough pass protection problems. I mean, we have seen him one-on-one with an island on an island blocking Myles Garrett. Mm-hmm. And so I strategically taking him off the field for Keaton Mitchell. I would like us to be selective about that because Ricard has, you know, there are problems Ricard solves that Keaton Mitchell will not solve for you.
I completely agree. And Ricard also changes the nature of your offense from a pure mesh point misdirection offense to a point of attack offense. Mm-hmm. Where even if the opposing team lines up wide to stretch out that offensive line in a way that might be uncomfortable, Ricard can still, you know, puncture a hole through that and create that second level opportunity for Derrick Henry or whoever you want to run the football.
Yeah.
All right. What else do we got here? I think we talked, 1.63 heavies per play. That was the lowest of the season so far.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and it's likely was out. So that had a lot to do with it. You saw Andrews 87% of the time, Ricard 62% of the time, and Kolar 43% of the time. And I'm looking at those three. That doesn't seem to add up correctly to 1.63. Because if I add those three up, I'm getting like 189 or something, or 105. That's 1.92. I'm going to have to look at that, folks. But it was a total of, I don't have the snaps for Andrews is my problem here. I think it was a total of about 105 snaps in 63 of 63 total ends up being 1.63. So what I've got here in my notes is not exactly correct. I do know it was the low for the season if I'm correct on that.
So I think Deontay Johnson's acquisition probably is going to trend us more into a lower heavy direction, right? As he gets more playing time, as he gets better with his playing time more incorporated into the offense.
It could. I'm almost tempted to say Keaton Mitchell gives you more chance to do that than Johnson does. So far in two games, obviously we haven't seen Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, he's had two targets, one ball. They're already a little bit frustrated with him, you know, not getting out of bounds, unfairly so, because Flowers really had to make the block on that play. Then he fell down on another play where mm-hmm. you know, it was a potential completion.
Lost the footing. Yep.
Yeah. All that was, you know, those things don't help, but I'm not going to say that they were entirely his fault or either. I'm just going to say that I think he's here to help the 11 personnel package when they want to run 11 personnel.
Yes.
I don't think he's here to take Bateman's job, and I don't think he's here to take Flowers' job.
No.
Yeah.
He could be here to take Aguilar's job.
He could be, except, you know, we're still playing Aguilar and we're still playing Wallace. And so Who exactly is losing snaps to wide receiver five here, Deontay Johnson?
Yeah, and so he also could be a depth acquisition for January, for December and January. Like they might be preventing a problem rather than, you know, adding, you know, a strength.
And if I had to, you know, point to where's the value in the trade, I think it's mostly the insurance policy is the value.
Yes. Yes.
And if they had to put him at the X, they probably could. I'm not sure it would be ideal, but they could if something happened to Bateman, and if they, you know, had to replace Flowers, God forbid, you know, either of those happen.
I'm knocking on wood over here.
Yeah, there you go. That's
The other thing is they paid nothing for him.
Yeah, I mean, if I pay nothing for somebody, I still want to have that item that I'm buying have value to me. And it's not they didn't actually pay nothing. There is some salary, dollars they have to pay, and it's a draft pick. It's an incremental contract in the non-rule of 51 time. So it's $625,000 effectively of salary cap you're going to eat over the thing. If he were to continue at this level of production for the whole year, the Ravens actually would have lost the arrangement. You'd have to look at the insurance value as providing you something, and that's just not going to necessarily show up. But I asked everybody to put a stake in the ground. And by the way, it's still open out there. I want four numbers from you if you want to participate in this thing. I've got a spreadsheet going on the side. Give me yards per target, and number of touchdowns. Those four items I'd like to have. Just you can DM it to me, or you can just put it out there in general Twitter if you want to respond to the tweet that had it, and I'll make sure it gets in the spreadsheet. We'll have some fun and look at this at the end. We've had some outrageous ones.
We pay car insurance, and we are happy when we don't have to use it.
Yep.
And so we bought a little bit of wide receiver insurance, and I will be okay if we don't have to use it.
And you know what? That goes triple for life insurance. Yeah, you're
yes, indeed.
Okay. That pay that.
Yeah.
All right. Some other things we can talk about receiving, but I'll tell you what, let's drop it and yeah. We'll go into the second part of the show. Jim, always a pleasure to talk football with you.
I cannot tell you how much I enjoy doing this. I always appreciate the invite, and it's a gas for me.
We will make sure you get back again on before the year's out, I hope. Maybe talk defense next time. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Well, you can talk football with me on Twitter or on Threads, and I have a weekly column on RSR about the Ravens pass catchers. Usually, I'm trying to frantically finish it Wednesday, so you will see the notification for it on Thursdays usually.
All right. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, this is the week, guys. Hit me up if you want to be on a short. I got time this week because of the mini buy. Love to have some new people on that I've never had on before. And any topic you want to talk about should be a slivery thin so we can talk about it in about 20 to 25 minutes. Don't think of yourself as presenting material. And the ideal thing I'd want, and you know, hit me up with your idea and we'll get on a phone call. We'll talk about it for 5 minutes. But usually what I want is about 3 bullet points on what are 3 topics you want to talk about. And believe me, when you're talking to me, just like when you're talking to Jim, 3 bullet points will take you 20 minutes easily. So anyway, we really appreciate talking to some new people. Thanks for everybody loyally listening to the show. Jim, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need. And you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.